The following live presentation by Rabbi David Aaron is brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To learn more about Israelite, please visit our website at www.israelite.org. Additional contact information is available at the end of this presentation. Thank you for learning with Israelite and enjoy the experience.
I don't know about you, but I know that sometimes I come home at night when I'm not traveling in America, and I feel really hungry. So I open up the refrigerator door, and I don't know, nothing in there speaks to me. It's not old enough to start to live. But nothing here speaks to me. You know, when I look at the soya burger, for sure not. The, you know, whatever, yeah. I go through whatever's in the fridge, and nothing seems to do it. So I close the door, and then I come back a couple seconds later and I open the door again. And again, same thing, nothing's changed in the last couple of seconds. And I close the door and I walk away. And then I come back and open the door again, as if some little elves in the meantime must have put something new. Have you ever had that experience where you just keep opening and closing the door of the refrigerator and it's full, you know, but for some reason, nothing's there, right? And I would say that's because what you're looking for is not in the refrigerator. It's in the freezer. I'm just joking. Or it must be ice cream. Okay. What we're looking for is not food. The soul feels hungry. We confuse that hunger and hope that we can satisfy that hunger with something, whether it's food or whether it's a new dress. I always think about that. Sometimes I think a new dress will help me, but it doesn't. Or new perfume or whatever. And we hope that somehow the emptiness that we feel in our hearts can be filled with things. But you know what? It just doesn't work. Sometimes it gives us a temporary kind of buzz, maybe a little satisfaction, but then that gnawing emptiness returns. And we don't know what it is. We don't know what it is. So I once saw a great bumper sticker, you know, all these heavenly bumper stickers, prophetic bumper stickers. And on this bumper sticker it said, "The best things in life are not things." They're not things. We hope to somehow fill our souls with things, but our souls are only nurtured by no things. Not nothings, no things. Love is not a thing. It's very real, right? But it's not a thing. Meaning is not a thing, but it's very real. If a person feels that their meaning in life is gone, they may consider actually committing suicide. Even though they have everything, they're missing nothing, but yet somehow they are missing all the no things in their life. And so this is really quite a remarkable phenomenon, that unlike animals, we're basically happy with things. Give them food, give them shelter, as long as nothing's hurting them, they're happy. But because we are not animals, but we are souls, because we are divine souls, then we yearn for, we crave for divinity in our lives. And I once met a fellow who was in recovery. And he told me something that was very interesting. I didn't know this. But he said that, maybe it's in 12 steps, whatever program he was in, that there's a saying that goes, there's a God-sized hole in everyone. And only God can fill that hole. So what I want to share with you is a chart that I've developed based on Kabbalah, which I call the fulfillment chart. And I'm not doing this chart justice because it really could be a whole day seminar. God willing, soon we'll turn it into a whole day seminar. But here's a little preview, and I think whatever I can share with you, I think you'll find extremely helpful. Because we're all looking for fulfillment. And even though I personally don't attribute tremendous meaning to the English language, I attribute tremendous meaning to the Hebrew language, but words are words, and there must be some meaning why words become the words that they are. So I begin to kind of contemplate the word fulfillment. It's a kind of crazy word, if you think of it. What does it really mean? You want to be filled with the full. Get that? Strange thing. Fulfilled. I want to be fulfilled, which means I want to be filled with the full. Who's the full? What's the full? Right. In Jewish tradition, one of the words that suggests divinity is kol. Kol, the all. That's one of the words that suggests God. In fact, I think it's next week's Parsha, it says that Avram was blessed bakol, with all. So what does it mean to be blessed with all? What does it mean to be blessed with all? And in fact, in the benching, you might recall where there's a point where we say, bakol, mikol, kol, kain, right? So Avram was blessed bikol, Yitzchak was blessed with mikol, from all, and Yaakov was blessed with all. What's the all? What's the all? You might remember the story where Yaakov is very worried about meeting his brother Esav, who's ready to kill him. And, well, thank God Esav has some change of heart, and they're in dialogue. Yaakov wants to give his brother a gift. His brother says, I have plenty. I have lots. Rov. Yeshli Rav. I have a lot. I don't need your gift. And Yaakov says, Yeshli Kol. I have everything. How can anybody have everything? How could Yaakov say that he's got everything? In Nebuch, the life that he had everything. Right? But you can't have everything. Where would you put it? That's right. So, what does it mean he has kol? Kol is referring to Hashem, God. When you feel the allness in your life, when you feel the full is filling your life, that's a God experience. So we want to be fulfilled. And what is fulfillment? It's not a lot of money. Although we hope it will be a lot of money, and I'm not against having a lot of money, right? But there are lots of people with lots of money, and they still don't feel fulfilled. Because if the money delivers some spiritual quality in their life, then that money could be a vehicle for fulfillment. But if it doesn't, then it's just money, right? And it can actually be a curse. I remember meeting this woman who a multi-millionaire, and she said to me, this money is a curse. Because it's destroying her marriage. It's destroying her children. So money could be a curse. Right? Who says? Right? So I want to go through this chart so that you can kind of chart out your path to fulfillment based on Torah and Kabbalah. The Kabbalah tells us that there are what's called 10 sefirot. The 10 sefirot are the 10 know things in life. And it is through these 10 know things that the endless presence of Hashem, the All, becomes manifest. Right? Love is a know thing. God is love. Love is not God, because God is also justice. But justice is not God, because God is also truth. But truth is not God, because God is also, we could go on and on and on. But all the spiritual qualities in the universe are really aspects of the divine. Okay? And we yearn, whether we're aware of it or not, whether we call ourselves religious or not, even if we call ourselves anti-religious, even if we call ourselves atheists, we still yearn to have the presence of God in our lives, even though we won't call it that. But we want meaning, and we want purpose, and we want love, and we want this, and we want that. These are not things. These are all the no things in life. So what I have here, and it's actually in the scheme of the way, the, so to speak, the sphera chart looks. And again, this is just a graphic that suggests the spiritual qualities in our lives, which, of course, can't be captured quite in words, or certainly not in diagrams. So let's start with Keter. Keter is the root of everything. If you don't plug into Keter, which means crown, then you can't even begin. Okay? What is that? Crown is when you are willful and wishful. You are filled with will. You feel inside yourself drive. This yearning, this wanting. And without it, life does not begin. Judaism tells us that the very life force is will itself. If you don't have will, forget about it. It takes will to stand here, it takes will to talk. And will is bombarding us all the time. You actually have no choice in will, right? What you want is your choice. That you want, you have no choice. Did you get that? You always want something or no thing or someone or maybe no one, right? But will is just pouring into us every single second. And when a person loses their will to live, they will die. In fact, Viktor Frankl points this out in his book, Man's Search for Meaning, where it demonstrates, Nebuch, that when people lose their will to live, they die. So it points out that, for instance, if somebody has been living for their spouse, their whole life was for their spouse, and, you know, Nebuch, their spouse dies, well, then they lose their will to live. And they could die quickly after that. Quickly after. So the more you want to live, the more alive you actually become. They actually found that people often die after New Year's. Well, what do you want? They get drunk and they get hit by a car. But other than that, people die after New Year's. People who have fatal illnesses put in their minds, but I want to live till New Year's. Right? It's amazing, the will to live is so important. So important. This is so critical for healing. Because what happens is that people stop wanting to live. And they don't realize that it's not just in the hands of the doctor, it's not just the medication. The will to live is life itself. Now, if you're living for money, it's just not enough of a motivator to want to live. Right? And especially when you get the money, and then you realize that everything you've been working towards just doesn't deliver the goods, you lose your will to live. So you really want to put in your life goals that really get you charged, that really make you willful and wishful. And that becomes the life power itself. And this would be an exercise that I would do if we had a lot more time, whereby you really should sit down and ask yourself, what gives you will? When do you feel that you are full of will? You are willful. You are wishful. That's when you feel so alive. And not just feel alive, you are alive. You tap into life force. But it's not your will. Again, you didn't create will. Will is not at will, right? It's not your will, it's God's will. I didn't invent will. I don't turn it on and turn it off. If it was really your will, so then I would ask you for just 5 seconds to stop willing right now. But you can't. Well, if you can't stop willing, well, then it's not your will. Then whose is it? Whoever's it is, that's who we call God. the source of all will. And the more you can tap into that will, the more you can draw that will into yourself, the more you make yourself receptive, the more you set for yourself goals that really generate and draw that will. Unbelievable. Just absolutely unbelievable. That's what's so amazing about the Jewish people. The will to survive. It's incredible. Incredible. The will to survive. And that's part of what I shared with those of you who were with me with the prayer service. You got to get in touch with what you want. Because it's everything. Prayer is an exercise of will. If you don't use it, you lose it. Just like a muscle. You have to exercise will. And I meet more and more people who just don't have willpower. They just don't have willpower. But you can't have willpower unless you exercise your will. So when do you exercise your will? When you make choices. We're in a world that doesn't want to make choices. People want choices made for them. They go to a psychic so that the psychic will tell them what to do. Because they don't want to make a choice. They don't take responsibility. If the psychic told me that this is a good, you know, a deal or this is a good match, good. Well, I don't want to go through the work to really say, what do I want? And take responsibility. Will is pouring into you all the time. So imagine yourself like a pipe. Will is water. And this will is streaming into you. Now you can turn your pipe this way, or you can turn your pipe that way. That's the choice. Where do you want to invest this will? Okay? Where do you want to put your will? And determined and based on which direction you direct your will determine how open the flow is for that will to pour into you even more. Imagine you take that pipe and you twist it into knots. The will just explodes. Can't pour through you. You can't get that stream of will into yourself. And prayer is an exercise of will. When you truly learn the Shemona Esrei, the 18 benedictions, you will discover what Judaism, what our sages teach us, is really worth wanting. And the more you invest your life in that which is worth wanting, the more willpower you get, because that's worth wanting. And so you get excited. It generates your juices. It motivates. So the highest and the beginning of everything, the foundation of life, is will. And I would say that so many people are suffering from weak willness. They are willness. They don't have an illness. They have a willness. That's what's missing. They don't know what they want. I saw a book, cute little book called I Could Get Anything I Want If Only I Knew What It Was. And that's the problem. What do I want? What do I want? Now you have to understand, we're in a world where there are people out there that are experts in convincing you what you want. Right? They're going to tap in. They know you want significance. So they try to fool you to think that if you wear this new jewelry or you do this or you identify with this, you're significant. They know that you want love. You want to feel connected. So they sell you sex appeal. They sell you, you know, a cruise with a group of people that you, you know, they know what they're doing. But you need to know what you're doing. So the will is the foundation. The will is the root. And everything stems from the will. Okay. Now, of course, everything else in your chart over here, if it's blocked, then the will can't pour through. So you need to be able to channel your will into these things or these no things that you should want. This is what you should want in your life. And the more you want this, the more will pour into you, the more willpower that will come to you, and the more you will feel filled with the fullness of God's presence in your life. Okay? Okay. So really, let's start with what's the first thing we should want in life. The first thing we should want is purpose in our life. We should want our lives to be purposeful. Full of purpose. And that's what's referred to in Judaism as kadosh. Kabbalah tells us that this sphera, which is described as chokhmah, or unfortunately, for lack of better terms, wisdom in English, but it doesn't get it. Chachma is identified, according to the Zohar, with kadosh, holiness. Again, the word yucky, holiness. What's holiness? A holy roller. Holiness, the word kadosh, when you come to Israel, you may go to a building dedication. So what would that be called? A hakdashah. Or if somebody donates money to some project, so they put a plaque and it's called a hakdashah, a dedication. Right? On one level, living a life of kadosha means living a dedicated life. But a dedicated life is a life that without any distraction, you are so focused on your purpose. You're so committed to a cause greater than yourself. That's purposeful. That's what kedusha is. It's a life of dedication. So many people today live life of distraction. I know for myself, when I'm in New York, I feel like the phone is always ringing. There's constant distraction. You're doing this, but something else is pulling you here. So you go here, and then something's pulling you over there. And this gets in the way of the ability to be the stream, to be the channel, for the willpower of God to actually come pouring through you. Because you just get all scattered, right? Purposeful is what we need to ask ourselves. What's my purpose on earth? But Judaism says your purpose on earth is to serve God. And to serve God means to serve, to be a channel for divine qualities and attributes to come into the world. Wisdom, understanding, kindness, justice, mercy, truth. These are all manifestations of God. To serve God, therefore, as I mentioned, you know, the other day, is not about some servile experience where I diminish myself and bow myself before some being over there. But rather, service means to be in service for the presence of Hashem and the ingredients of the presence of Hashem, all these attributes here that we're discussing. The more I'm a medium, so to speak, a channel for these qualities, the more fulfilled I feel, the more God's presence I feel in my life, the more connected I feel with that which is ultimately and forever real, and the better I feel. So the first thing we need to want in our lives, so that we draw that willpower and we become even more filled with will, is purpose. And purpose means I have this sense of undivided, undistracted focus and commitment to that which is greater than myself. That would be a holy life. It would be the committed life. It would be the devoted life. It would be the dedicated life. I would think perhaps what they really meant to say when they translated the word kadosh to holy is that they actually meant W-H-O-L-L-Y, which means you are wholly, completely with what it is that your life is about. You are wholly, you are completely in this moment. You are completely with this person. You're completely in what you're doing. Unfortunately, people are not completely in what they're doing. Right? They're doing this. I mean, I mentioned, I met this fellow. And while he's talking to me, he's writing notes that have to do not with me, but some business thing. He's just not there anymore. He has no presence anymore. And he's freaking out because he's dated 3,000 women. And he says, I'm not a good bonder. Well, you've got to be at the date to bond. You're not there. I mean, your body's there. But you've got to be there. You need to be present. And the more you're present, the more God will be present. Because you're a spark of God. Right? You're an expression of God. So therefore, in order to kind of open the channel and let the power of God's will fill you and animate you
and energize you. You've got to get in touch with your undivided purpose in life. Making money is not a purpose in life. People are making a living, but have no clue of the life that they're making a living for. Right? Again, I'm not anti-money, right? But the value of money is not the number that's written on the piece of paper. The value of the money is how it helps you plug into and be a channel for these divine qualities in your life. If this money does not facilitate a higher purpose, a godly purpose, then there's nothing to talk about, right? And you eventually lose your motivation. And there's more to it. Chachma is connected to thoughtful, right? You are filled with thought, right? You're not spaced out. What is a person who's thoughtful? A person who's thoughtful, oh, you thought of me. Oh, so nice. He thought of me. Thoughtful is that you pay attention to the details. Again, you're present. You're wholly involved with whoever you're involved with. Wholly involved with whatever you're doing. More important, you're wholly involved, wholly committed to Hashem, to God. We can go on. Let's go to the next one now. Bina. Bina is connected to meaningfulness. What's the difference between a person who feels that their life is purposeful, and a person who feels that their life is meaningful? But what's the meaning of meaning? Now I want you to understand that Kabbalah tells us that joy and happiness is connected to Bina. Right? That's how you get joy and happiness. So there's one Jewish philosopher who said that happiness is the certainty of being needed. When a person doesn't feel that they are needed, then they're not happy. It's a terrible, terrible, terrible feeling to feel that no one could care less about you. Your existence doesn't make a difference. And it's so crazy that we even hope, anticipate, expect that our existence would make a difference. Too. Well, I want you to know the good news from the Jews. Because Judaism says your life makes a difference to no less than God Himself. Because God is counting on you to be a vehicle, a channel for His presence on earth. And when you love somebody, it's not your love because you didn't create the love, you didn't invent the love, you're not the source of love, you didn't convince everybody to want love or need love or recognize love. So whose love is it? We don't make love. We reveal love. We channel love to each other. And when I love my wife, my job is to give God's love to my wife. And God is saying, I need you to give love to this woman. When I love my children, I'm giving God's love to my children. We are all emissaries to give each other God's love. And you know, and if you didn't give love for your mother or your father, there's somebody else out there that will give it to you. Right? Hashem has somebody to give you love. His love. And so meaning is when I feel like I'm a means to a greater end. That's meaning, right? I want to be a means. I don't want to be an end. That's the most meaningless existence when you see yourself as the be-all and the end-all of life. That's quite a remarkable idea, because what it's basically saying is Hashem's gift to us is that Hashem allows us to be a means to Himself. He doesn't need it, so to speak. But this is a gift. This is a gift, that I am a means to some higher cause. But when people live selfish lives, which is just for themselves, and they become the end, that is the end of their lives. And they will very possibly even end their life. Because when you make your life the end, then it's very likely you may eventually end your life. But when we feel that our life is for some greater end, beyond ourselves, wow, that's meaning. So your life has to be purposeful, dedicated with undivided, undistracted attention on something greater than yourself, and then successfully being a means to that greater cause, that greater no-thing, or actually a means to God, to be a channel for God's presence into the world. And it's connected to insightful, because it's one thing to have a general sense of your purpose, it's another thing to really be able to get inside what is it that you have to be doing. Let's go to the next one. Chesed. Chesed is we want to be helpful. We want to be bountiful. It's kindness. Chesed is kindness. So our purpose is the divine. We want to be a means for the divine to be manifest in the world. And the first quality that we can be a vehicle for is love and kindness for people. Are you doing good? Are you doing good? That fills us. To do good fills us. Gevurah is to be lawful or to be careful. You see, sometimes your bountifulness, your overflowing willingness to give to others, needs to be tempered with caution. Maybe it's too much. Maybe this isn't what they need. Maybe you need to be giving in a judicious way. Sometimes giving is destroying. So therefore, to truly be a vehicle for God's love and presence in the world, you need to know how to do a tzimtzum, when to kind of constrict, when to hold back. For instance, there was a woman who did Israelite, and she told me that her son was in rehab, and but he was like in such a situation, he was essentially institutionalized. But she gets a call that her son has escaped. And in all likelihood, he's probably going to show up at home. So this is your greatest test of love. If he comes to your home, you cannot let him in. And at that very moment, he knocked on the door while she's on the call. She calls out the window. Who is it? Mom, it's Joey. Mom, Joey, I got a little time off. They gave me a little vacation because I've been doing so good. And she couldn't believe it. She said, Joey, I know what's going on. And I can't let you in. No, Mom, you don't understand. I just want to give you a big hug, Mom. I just want to spend some time with you, Mom. Joey, I can't let you in. Mom, you can't do this to me. He starts crying. He starts begging. He starts swearing. He starts telling her how a horrible mother she is and how she doesn't love him. She said it was the greatest test of her love. So kindness, to really be helpful, you have to also be careful. You have to also be lawful. Not awful. Lawful. Which is, you gotta play by the rules, right? There's an amazing piece in the Torah that says that a man cannot have sexual relations with a sister because it's chesed, because it's kindness. That's ridiculous. Yeah, I can't believe that. The Torah would use that incredible, beautiful word chesed, kindness, to describe such a perverse sexual relationship? Yes, because the root of that relationship is kindness. It's the desire to give. But the desire to give isn't always good. Giving is not always good. But giving that is properly measured, controlled giving, that's good. So in order for the willpower of Hashem to flow through us so we can be willful and wishful, we have to first pay our attention to being purposeful. And then once we get what is the purposeful, we need to figure out how to then be meaningful. How can we be a means for this purpose to become manifest? And the first thing that needs to be manifest is the kindness that you're going to do for the world in whatever your purpose is. Whether your kindness is to bring art to the world, or whether your kindness is to bring, I don't know, healing to the world, whatever it is. Whatever your service is. But we're all serving. But if you're a doctor, then serve to be a channel for God's healing in the world. And if you're a rabbi, then serve to be a channel for God's wisdom and Torah in the world. And if you're a garbage man, serve to bring into the world God's care for proper environment. But that's what it's about. How am I serving? How can I really fill myself with all the precious no-things of life? Otherwise, I feel like nothing. And then, all this has to come through what's called in Kabbalah, Tiferet, which is that you got to be truthful. Okay? Tiferet correlates in what Judaism refers to as Torah. Right? Torah is the guiding line. Right? You have to want to do good. You have to know how to be in control of how to measure it out. And then you need to be filled with the guidance of how to do what you're supposed to do. You know, Rabbi Shlomo Kalmbach was once invited to a college campus to speak. And Rabbi Shlomo Zichronovacha was very spontaneous, and he was an overflowing kind of personality. And he was so filled with Torah, he never prepared for a class. So he didn't even ask what the topic was. All right. He gets to the college and says, "Hey, brother, what am I teaching?" So I said, "Well, you're going to actually be part of a debate." A debate? Now, if you ever had the pleasure to meet with Shlomo, you would know that this is totally not Shlomo. To have a debate. Well, what's the debate about? He says, "Well, actually, you're on a panel. There's going to be a Reform rabbi, a conservative rabbi, and you're the Orthodox rabbi," which is like exactly what he wanted. Right? I said, "Okay, well, what are we debating about?" He says, "Well, we're going to debate about the historicity of the Torah. Did God give the Torah at Sinai?" This is so much not Rosh Shlomo. And this is how Rosh Shlomo handled it. So I actually asked him to start. So this is what he said. He said, "Oh, holy friends, ever open your heart. So deep." He said, "You know, before I could even talk about whether the Torah is from God, I need to talk about how much we need a Torah from God. Because if you don't think you need a Torah from God, it doesn't really matter if there's a Torah from God." He mummish knocked them all out of the ring. So brilliant. All right, it's like he totally turned the conversation around. What's the talk about? He says, "You know, friends, we're the only creatures in the world that need guidance." It's unbelievable. Animals, they know exactly what to do. They're so clever, you know? I remember, Shlomo didn't say this, but I'm saying, I remember I went with my children to this bee farm where they produce honey. And they have all these beehives, and they have a little, like, presentation to show kids and big kids like me, you know, how bees do what they do. And they show you a little video, and in the middle of the room is a glass beehive with a tube that goes out of the ceiling. And you see this little beehive, right? And it's really quite remarkable. And then they give you this whole talk about the queen bee and how she goes out and then she comes back and she does this dance in the form of an eight, the numeral eight, which indicates to all the worker bees where the honey is. That sounds totally ridiculous. Like, yeah, right. Okay, fine. Suddenly, as this guy's giving his presentation, "Oh, wait, I can't believe it. This almost never happens. It's the queen bee." Right? And you see this bee going, you know, coming down this glass tube. And you see all the little worker bees getting, like, really excited. And I cannot believe my eyes. Literally, this bee gets into the middle of the crowd and starts doing this really funky-looking dance of the eight. Right? Unbelievable. Got it? Unbelievable. Okay? So, what wisdom Now, I want to know where that bee took lessons to do that. Who taught that bee how to do that? And also how they decide who the queen bee is. Like, there's no, like, political ballots, you know, lobbying, you know, let me be your queen bee. I mean, like, what, they know what to do. Animals know what to do. Human beings are the most confused creatures on Earth. Unbelievable, right? Crazy. If we were Martians from another planet, and sometimes I think we are, but imagine we were to land on planet Earth, and we would see a woman give birth to a baby, and we would see a cow give birth to a calf. Who would we think is the superior beings on Earth? The cow! Right? For sure! Right. Not to mention all the crimes on planet Earth that cows don't seem to commit. Huh? Unbelievable. We're the only creatures in the world that need guidance. So why don't we look for guidance? And then, where do we look for guidance? Well, here we have a book. Maybe it's from God, maybe it's not. But are there too many books that claim to be from God? Right? So already, listen, it's worth a read. You know what I mean? It's worth a read. Why not? I don't know if I told you the story. I taught a group of kids from the Reform Synagogue. I was invited to speak on Shabbat. So I thought in those days I was into proving Torahs from God. I gave up that habit. But that day I thought that was a really important thing to do. So, but then I realized, no, if I try to do that, that's not going to work. So I should try and create a dialogue amongst themselves. So I decided that what I would do is ask the group, is there anybody here who believes that the Torah is from God? If I could get one kid out of like the 30 or 40 kids, and all the friends say, yeah, you really believe the Torah is from God? Wow, that's really interesting. They could have a dialogue and I could pull away. But of course, this is going to depend on one kid saying that they believe the Torah is from God. You never know. So I come in there and I say, anybody here believe the Torah is from God? Again, there's about 30, 40 kids. Right? Almost the entire room put up their hand. I was so surprised, I started to laugh. They said, you don't believe it's from God? I said, well yeah, I do, but I don't know, I was just surprised. I said, okay, fine, that's very interesting. Can I ask you another question? How many people here have read the Torah from cover to cover? Nobody put up their hand. Okay, now at that time, the best-selling book was The Godfather. So I said, anybody here, let me know, how many of you here have read The Godfather? Every one of them put up their hand. So I said, well, I don't understand something. Help me. You walk into Barnes & Noble's. There's two books on the stand. One says The Godfather by Mario Puzo. The other one says Mario Puzo by The Godfather. Right. Which book would you read? A book that you said you think is written by God or a book that you know is written by Mario Puzo? They couldn't get the question. They said, I mean, God, if God were to write a better book, we would read it. He just doesn't have that flair. What? Well, they made a movie out of it. I mean, you know. Okay, you know. But that's the problem. Right? Here we have a book that claims itself to be the guiding principle for life on Earth. I mean, again, maybe it's not. But hey, isn't it worth a try? And when you start looking at Jewish history and you look at the incredible sages that it's produced, like Benny Friedman and David Aaron, then of course you say, well, maybe there's something to it. So, you know, to be truthful means that I'm filled with the truth. And we believe that a Torah is emet. Torah is true. And it's the guiding principles that enables us to navigate the balance between how much to give and how much to hold back. So therefore, the chesed and the gevura kind of pour into and are, you know, the mixer, so to speak, is the truthfulness. And also mercifulness, which is compassion, is also the ability, when you're devoted to compassion, you're devoted to, once again, that blend, that mixture of how much to give and how much to hold back. Let's go on. Now, once you've got all that as your focus, and now the power of will is just gushing through you like a powerful river of life, because you've opened these channels up, because you've pointed your direction to the purposeful, the meaningful, the helpful, the careful, the truthful. Well, then you start feeling beautiful, right? Because what is beauty? That's hod. You start feeling yourself embodying beauty. Now again, beauty. Who's beauty? What's beauty? Beauty isn't a thing. Beauty is a quality. But it's so real, people pay thousands and millions of dollars for beauty. And yet, do you think it's the house that's beautiful? Do you think it's the painting that's beautiful? This painter had the ability to take lines and colors and coordinate in such a way that suddenly God's beauty is manifest through that painting. And so too, once you start feeling that you're filling up with God's wisdom, God's insight, and God's care, and God's goodness, and God's truth, then you can't not feel beautiful. You know, it's so interesting. Have you ever met somebody that sets you up on a blind date? And they tell you that this person is absolutely stunning and gorgeous. You get to the date and you are nauseous. You can't believe it. How can my friend tell me that this is an attractive person? What could be attractive about this person? Right? Now, you don't know what to do because it's very embarrassing. So you feel like saying, I'm David's brother. He asked me to come and tell you he wasn't feeling well. That's not a nice thing to do, right? I never did that. The girls did that to me, right? I never did that. I'm just joking. Okay. So you say, okay, I'll give them 10 minutes. And then I'll say I'm not feeling well, which was not a lie. I really don't feel well. So, you know, you're taking a walk in the park, maybe in Central Park, hoping you get mugged and you can run away. But, all right, fine. So after 10 minutes you take the courage to take another look, you know what? Not so bad. I'll give her another 10 minutes. Another 10 minutes go by, and suddenly you say, Gavalt. Kind of grows on you. All right, another 10 minutes goes by, you say, oh my gosh, cute. Another 10 minutes goes by, you say, wow, beautiful. What happened? But the opposite happens. Right? Someone tells you they're going to fix you up with someone who is really beautiful. A model. A model. Wow. Front cover of Cosmopolitan. And she's Jewish. Right? Wow. I had a guy, you know, because I love to do matchmaking. A guy comes up to me, he says, I'm looking for a cross between Raquel Welch, if you remember her, and Joan Baez. And Jewish. Right. Yeah, okay. So, but you sometimes can fix up, and you walk in, and you can't believe it. You've decided within seconds you want to spend the rest of your life with this person, because they're so beautiful. But suddenly, you start to talk. You don't know what to do. For some reason, they just aren't as attractive. And then you talk a little more, and they start to become even less attractive. And then within a short amount of time, they become repulsive. How? They work for the greatest model agency in the world. You know why? I once invited a woman to my home for Shabbat, Friday night dinner. And she was a model. Now, I forgot who else I had invited. I invited 7 yeshiva boys. And I'm thinking as I'm walking back from the coast to the Western Wall with this woman, this very attractive woman, who else did I invite tonight? So this Yankee, and this Moishi, and this Shmuley, and this Gavalt. I can't believe this, right? Well, so we walk into the house. I open the door. She's behind me. All these yeshiva guys are sitting on my couch. They fall off the couch. So I go, her behind me. Okay, so they take a look at her, and they just struck. Couldn't believe it. I go, oh, yeah, yeah. What a Friday night this is going to be. We sit around the Shabbos table, right? And the guys are kind of looking at her. Like, of course, they don't want to look at her. They want to look at the Kiddush cup, whatever. But, you know. And then we start this conversation. And I'm, of course, hoping they'll ask me something about the Parsha of the week. But they turn to her and immediately ask her some question. She begins to speak, and all the guys kind of have this eye exchange, like, oy vey. Oy vey, Rabbi. Tell us about the Parsha. So within seconds, she lost their interest. Because sadly enough, although her body was beautiful, she was ugly inside. And you have to say, in the deepest, deepest place of your true self, you couldn't be ugly. Your godliness. But if you block that up, if you don't channel Hashem's spirit into the world through you, you're just not beautiful. You're not attractive. I want you to know Kabbalah says that only God is attractive. Only God. And the more God you reveal, the more attractive you are. And therefore, how is it possible you could meet somebody who's so beautiful, and then suddenly you realize they're ugly? Because, you know, maybe they channel beauty, but they don't channel goodness. They don't channel truthfulness. They don't channel mercifulness. They don't channel insightfulness, thoughtfulness. And they're really not beautiful. And when a person becomes a channel for God's wisdom and God's insight and God's truth and God's law, then not only do they feel beautiful, they feel thankful. You feel so thankful because you really do celebrate life, because that's worth celebrating. That is worth celebrating, to do something good, to do something right, to bring a little more God into a person's life. You feel thankful, you feel grateful, and then you feel wonderful. And the world is such a wonder. Everything you do feels so wonderful. And you feel blissful. Right? There's a certain bliss in your life because you are filling up. Once you get to that place, you then, of course, feel so powerful. Look, you are a channel for God's wisdom. You have a purposeful, meaningful, loving, caring, truthful life. Wow! You feel so beautiful and you feel so powerful because you have become a glove for the hands of God in this world. And that becomes your power. You become powerful and you become masterful. First of all, you become full of the master. But you become masterful because you've got all the skills, you've got all the colors that you need to make a great life. You feel forceful, right? Because you're filled with the force. And you feel truly successful, because that's the success. There's only one success in life. The success in life, did I successfully channel God's presence in the world? Now, the ingredients of God's presence is wisdom and insight. And kindness, and justice, and righteousness. These are all the presence of God. That's the presence of God. And that's true success. So you can have a person who makes a tremendous amount of money, and they use their money to bring God into the world. Wow, what a wealthy person. That money is true wealth. And you can have another person who uses that money to do no good in the world. Nothing. And that money is a curse. There's no wealth in that money. I once saw a cute ad by Chabad in Los Angeles. It said, many poor souls live in million-dollar mansions. I don't know how many people come to the classes, because who wants to admit that? But I've met so many poor souls. So many poor souls that have so much money. I feel so rich when I'm with these people. I feel rich, Baruch Hashem, anyways. What is richness? This is the richness. So again, don't get me wrong. Be successful in your career, but ask yourself, what attribute of God am I bringing into the world? Am I bringing healing into the world? Am I bringing beauty into the world? Am I bringing justice, truth, kindness? That's a service. And all we want to be in is in service. The worst thing is to be a vending machine and have someone put a sign that says, out of order, out of service. Terrible. Once you have this, you get to what is Yesod. Yesod, according to Kabbalah, is the synergy of all of this. When all of this comes together, what you feel is plentiful, bracha. What you feel is peaceful. You feel whole. You feel harmonized. You'll feel at peace because you'll know that you're doing what you're meant to be doing on earth. And that's the feeling of peacefulness. You will feel useful. Ah, that's all I want in my life. I want to feel useful. It's so frustrating. Imagine you're a buzzsaw. And people use you to cut cheese. I'm a buzzsaw. Look what they do with me. I could be cutting trees. I could be doing big things in the world. I could be on Venice Beach with some guy juggling me. I mean, I could be so useful. And this is what they do with me. I want to feel useful. You know, Hashem has given every single one of you a talent. Right? Hashem blessed me with the gift of gab. I did nothing for this. Nothing. I was doing, you know, plays when I was a kid in Hebrew school. I got the best parts. I had no problem being in front of a lot of people. I did nothing for this. Right? That's just a gift. Now, what am I going to do with it? Right? So, look at, I could go, you know, on, you know, the comedian station. I could get a job on Saturday Night Live. I don't know what I might be able to do with it. It's not what I wanted to do. But I know what I want. When I was a kid, I thought, I'm going to be an actor. Then when I got older, I said, I'm going to be a rock star. Then when I got older, I said, I'm going to be a rabbi. Now, what? They're all really different shades. But the point was, I knew inside myself that Hashem blessed me with the ability to communicate. Now, what am I going to communicate? Am I going to communicate God? Or am I going to communicate junk? I feel so useful when I'm up here doing this. To me, this is my blissfulness. To be able to just use my talents to serve God. Wow. And every single one of you have a talent. There's no question. Absolutely. Now, what are you doing with it? How are you serving Hashem? How are you finding your purposefulness and your meaningfulness? How are you being good? And how are you being careful? And how are you being truthful and compassionate? And how are you really tapping into the beauty that whatever talents Hashem has graced you with, you can be? Usefulness. That's it. That's a prayer you should say every morning. Get up in the morning and say, God, use me. I don't want people to use me. When God uses me, I feel so full. You don't want to be abused, but you do want to be used. And I want people to use me. Use me. People say, Rabbi, thank you for your time. Thank you for my time. Do you know what you're doing for me? You're asking me this question. You're asking me to give you a little advice in your life. Wow, thank you for allowing me to be useful. We all want to be useful. Be useful to who? Right, you got to ask yourself. You're in a company, and you feel very useful to your boss. But then you find out that your boss is the biggest jerk in the world. And useful for what? To promote things that are hurting people, destroying people's lives. This is not God. And it eats you up. Eats you up. Eats you up. And then you feel joyful. You feel fruitful. You feel graceful. Why do you feel graceful? Because you're in the groove, right? When you're so plugged into this flow, this channel of God's Spirit through you, it says, Shomer Raglav Chasidav, Hashem guards the feet of his Chasidim. Right? You mamish start to sing, you know, you start doing these mitzvahs, learning Torah, the davening, the Shabbos, opens up these channels, and you just hear yourself going, da 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 die, feeling groovy. Bye bye bye, die, feeling groovy. I know you don't believe this, but I want you to go to Muncie. You will see in the synagogues early in the morning, see them come to daven. And mamish thing this. People looking at me like, you're nuts. I'm nuts. Okay, let's go on. You feel delightful. Kabbalah tells us that Yesod is chen. Yosef had chen. Everybody loved Yosef, except his brothers. What's chen? Why did the king see in Yosef? What did he see? He saw that this man could represent me. What is chen? Why do people feel you have chen? You have charm. You're delightful. That's delightful, is charming. Because when you embody the presence of Hashem in you, then you embody everyone. Because everyone's included in the presence of Hashem. And if people can see, I can trust you. People see in you themselves. People feel that you represent them because you're a little representation of them also. And therefore, when a person embodies all these divine attributes within themselves, and they begin to fill themselves with the presence of Hashem, and begin to be a channel for the presence of Hashem into the world, then you're delightful. There's a charm to you. That was Yosef. Yosef had the multicolored coat. His brothers had single colors. He pulled all the colors together. He was delightful. And then you feel zestful. Oh! You know, you meet people that just don't have zest. And I tell you, it's embarrassing. You go to shul, you say good Shabbos to someone, and you reach out and you shake their hand, and you feel like you just shook, you know, a piece of gefilte fish. Like you just, you know, you know, what is this? Where's your aliveness? Right? I mentioned the other day that it says when we read the Torah, persons call up the Torah, we say, Atem advekim b'Hashem chayim kuchem ayom. Those of you who bond with God are totally, absolutely, completely alive. Every fiber of your being is alive. You're alive. This is life force. If you can embody all of this, this is it. You're zestful. Now, of course, in order for all this to happen, you need malchut, which is to be mindful of all this and to be faithful to all this. And interesting enough, malchus and keter, the valve to open, so to speak, to open this channel is to be mindful and faithful to all of this. And when you do this, you achieve the awesome experience of feeling filled with the full, with the kol, with the all, with Hashem. This is what Judaism promises us. This is what Torah delivers to us. People are looking for spiritual technologies. We had it. We have it. We had it. And all we got to do is use it. Thank you.
This presentation by Rabbi David Aaron has been brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To access additional presentations from our online media library, order our best-selling books, or learn more about Israelite programming, including seminars, web-based learning, teleconferences, spiritual retreats, Shabbaton experiences, Israel missions, and leadership training, please visit us at www.israelite.org. That's www.israelight.org. You can also call us in New York at 212-947-4990 or in Jerusalem at country code 972-2-627-4890. We hope you enjoyed this presentation, and we look forward to learning with you at Israelite.